Hello again. Welcome to season 2 of Conversation Crucible. This is the first episode of our new season. I'm pleased to announce that I have today with me a very special guest. Allow me to introduce the wonderful Oreo Nilere.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Brilliant. So of course, could you please briefly talk about yourself?
Sure. What can I say about myself? I am a proud left-hander who decided almost very randomly to up sticks and uproot myself to a different continent, all in the name of journalism.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So what about your educational background?
It's all English. It's all English. Yeah. Born and raised in the UK. And I will say that I'm quite proud of that. Yeah. Doesn't negate my Nigerian ancestry, but all the more, yeah, happy with my education and my background as a British Nigerian.
Excellent. When and why did you develop an interest in the media industry?
That started in my teenage years. I suppose it probably actually started a little bit earlier than that, if I'm very honest. I knew from, or I had a great sense from a young age that I wanted to work on television, but not in the format of acting or singing or dancing. I didn't know at the time as a child what in television I wanted to do. I just looked at the box in the living room and was just like, yeah, I would like to be on that. But as the years went on, I did then just think, okay, I don't know what it will be. But then when I was in college and going through Career Day, it was one of my tutors that sort of introduced media studies and journalism to me. And that is where it began.
Interesting. So, of course, I am aware that, you know, during your time at the NHS, you participated in what is known as hospital radio.
Yes.
For the benefit of our audience, do you mind talking about this?
Sure. Hospital radio is exactly what it is. It's radio broadcasted from hospital for hospital patients and others, but predominantly for inpatients. Because what you find is that, especially in England, you know, more times than not, patients tend to spend a lot of time, you know, in the hospital. And so they must not forget the sense of outside or normalcy or whatever is going on outside of tests and being in a ward. And so that's where hospital radio stemmed from, giving them information and entertainment to let them know that the outside world or the world outside of hospital still is in existence and they get to be a part of that. It also takes away from, it also takes away from, you know, them being in hospital and being bored and thinking about whatever reason as to why they're in hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
So besides sort of trying to keep them in the loop of what's going on outside the hospital environment. Do you also have sort of custom-made content for people in hospital?
Absolutely. I mean, it's in-house. It's the same format as you would be creating, you know, a show or a segment for mainstream radio stations. And it is also as interactive as it would be on mainstream radio stations. So on hospital radio, you do get the opportunity, patients do get the opportunity to interact. For example, they can request songs, family and friends can send out messages to them so that they can listen, you know, to it whilst being in the hospital. So it's the exact same way that you would format a show for mainstream radio. That's exactly what you would do on hospital radio. It's really just the location and predominantly the listeners. That's the major differences.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So of course, I think we did discuss this in our earlier conversation when I told you that I had stayed in hospital for a while at some point. And I think during my stay there, I didn't find anything like, you know, the hospital radio besides, you know, the average person who would have that portable radio by their bedside or something.
To be very honest with you, I haven't heard of hospital radio anywhere other than in the UK. So I don't know how popular it is, you know, in Nigeria or in America or any other part of the world. I don't know that it's completely unique to the UK or the NHS, but it's not something that I have come across in other walks of life. Mm. But it is something that I think that, you know, the healthcare industry should get involved with, actually. I think it's a nice idea. It's a good addition to your time in the hospital because, you know, at the end of the day, nobody really likes going to the hospital, do they?
Right. Yeah. So, have you, I mean, of course, we know the obvious reasons why this probably hasn't, you know, become popular in Nigeria, but is there anything you would say that, or would you say about, you know, what the healthcare sector of Nigeria must do in order to incorporate hospital radio?
I think that the healthcare sector in Nigeria is very far away from thinking about hospital radio. I don't think it's really on their first page of things that they need to already have in place and in their structure. Unfortunately, the healthcare system in Nigeria is very poor. You know, we're currently going through a pandemic at the moment. And, you know, this is one of the telltale signs to let you know just how weak the health sector is in Nigeria. Take away the pandemic and just on a day-to-day basis, we find that there is a tier of people that go to the hospital and a tier of people that would rather travel out for their healthcare. And that speaks a lot to the country in itself when citizens have to go elsewhere to get good healthcare. You know, healthcare should be a fundamental part of a country and how they look after their citizens. It shouldn't be something that we question. It shouldn't be something that we are anxious about. It should just be something that all citizens are confident to go to. But unfortunately, the healthcare system here lacks quite a lot. So, you know, I'd be very disappointed if hospital radio came in anytime soon in Nigeria without ticking the more important boxes.
Nicely said.
Yeah.
Right. So it would be remiss of me not to highlight this interesting statement, a healthy dose of optimism, faith and grace, which is how you describe the manner with which you relocated to Nigeria.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In your written interview in The Guardian Woman. So I'd like for you to like take us through why you said that.
I said that because for me, those were, at the time of moving here, those were the three ingredients that I felt were at the core of me moving here. I think if I didn't have a little bit of faith, if I didn't look at the glass as being half full, which is, you know, being optimistic or having a good dose of optimism, I don't know how long I would have survived here. So I really had to look at, I had to paint myself a positive and pretty picture. Because you must understand, this is new terrain to me. This is and was new terrain to me. To be quite fair, I am still learning the lay of the land, you know, as the time goes on. And so I didn't want to, you know, focus on all the negative things because it's so easy to put your mind on that. So I did say that, okay, I had to have faith that it was going to work. I had to be optimistic about moving here. And, you know, I had to be welcoming to the fact that I was going to transition and make that decision that, yes, this is where I want to be for, you know, for the foreseeable future. And I want to succeed at it. Yeah.
Oh, well. So what has your experience been so far? Not only as sort of like a newcomer in the Nigerian media industry, but also as a woman.
Oh, as a woman as well. Okay. that's an interesting connotation to put out there to ask me how it's been as a woman. So, you know, Nigeria, or, well, I'm in Lagos State. So it really is what you make of it. It definitely comes with its frustrations. And I do like to say that, you know, the fundamental basics in the Western world are the fundamental frustrations here in Nigeria. And by that, I mean what we, and we shouldn't say what we take for granted, but what comes easy to us in the Western parts of the world, or what came easy to me that I didn't have to, you know, give a second thought to: electricity, transportation, healthcare, you know, basics like that, internet even, those type of things that I dare not say that I take for granted, but they were just the basics that you always had. These are part of the daily frustrations here in Nigeria. And when you take away, or when you have to question the absolute foundation and basics, it makes things very hard or quite difficult to move forward pleasantly, because you have to always be concentrating on the basics. Whereas, you know, in England, you wouldn't have to think twice about, you don't have to question whether there's electricity. A generator is something that a hospital has as a backup in case of an emergency. It is not part of the tools that you have and must have, you know, as somebody that lives in Nigeria. Transport and traffic, you know, they are the bane of moving around in a congested city like Lagos. Data is very expensive and it's not reliable. So these are things that you would never give a second thought to in a different part of the world. But here, they are part of your day-to-day life. And so, yes, the fundamental basics in other parts of the world end up being the fundamental distractions or the daily distractions in these parts. So that is something that you quickly have to, you know, be accustomed to and, you know, just figure it out and get on with it. Because these are things that you need on a daily basis. So that is something that you quickly learn to adjust to. You know, you also have to adjust to the culture here, the behavior here, the manner here. If you haven't experienced it, if it's not part of, if it's not an integral part of your life or what you're used to, it is definitely an eye-opener here. How you relate with people, how people relate with you, you know, the culture, the behavior of people, because you're gonna, you definitely meet different all walks of, you definitely meet different walks of people, you know, across the way, anywhere you are. But in Nigeria, they are definitely a different breed, I have to say. Mm. They are definitely a different breed. So that is also something that is a bit of a learning curve. And just the aggression, because this is a very hard country. It's also a very hard city. And I'm not talking about just, you know, the heat and whatnot, but, you know, poverty. If we're talking about poverty, Nigeria's, I can't quite remember where we currently rank right now on the list, but we're quite high up as, you know, one of the top 10 poverty nations of the world. And it is very transparent. And unfortunately, the divide between rich and poor is also very transparent. And it's going to take a lot to bridge that gap, right, you know, in terms of the type of people that we, you know, in terms of governance, shall I say, that might be a better word to use. So, yes, these are all things that you learn, you know, as being here, and you observe and you witness. You don't necessarily have to participate, but it is glaringly in your face, and you can't miss that. As a woman, I would have to say, my experience of being here, you know, sure, there is, it's a very cultural land, I would say. No, I wouldn't just say it is. That is a matter of fact. Nigeria is a very cultural land. They have rules that they do abide by. Are these rules trying to be broken down by the new generation? Of course. But that's happening across the world. It is just more prevalent here in these parts of the world where, you know, man is number one and woman is not number one, is what I would say to that. How have I actually experienced that? Well, you know, it's a little bit swings and roundabouts. You can tell when people are being a little bit like, okay, you're the woman and we're going to disregard you. And an example of that would be going out, you know, to a restaurant and being greeted by a man. So what they do is they will greet every other man and not greet you. And that for me was something that I found very odd, because I was like, I do believe I'm at this table. Mm. And what was told to me was just that, oh no, it's not, once they greet the men, then the women need to take the greeting from that, because they don't want to be offending any person, you know, man that table, which I find ridiculous, because I don't want to take my greeting from a man. I want to take my greeting directly. But again, it's something that we have to begin to start educating and trying to change that mindset that women are not at the back. We can be side by side with a man and just, you know, drop that form of hierarchy. It would be nice to see that. How long will it take? That would be very difficult to say.
Oh, well. Another thing that I thought to ask you was, of course, I know different people who would like to also get into the media industry. But of course, when you have, you know, the pervasiveness of harassment within the industry, what advice would you give to women who are interested in getting into the industry?
You know, it's very tough, and you're quite right to highlight and address that, because, yeah, that is quite prevalent. And, you know, it's one of those things where experience will teach wisdom, but you shouldn't have to experience that to get the wisdom to be, you know, to then learn how to behave. Yes, like I said, it is a little bit prevalent. I'm lucky that I haven't experienced it, but I have witnessed it, and I can see the discomfort and, you know, the unprofessionalism that brings. And when you're trying to even just crack into the industry, let alone make it into the industry, it's a very dicey place to be in, you know, as a woman. It's not favorable, and it's key to have your wits about you without feeling like you're being on an aggressive side, which is unfortunately can be a coinage and can be to a disadvantage. All I could say to that is just to have your wits about you. And if in any situation where it feels like it's going down that avenue, then it's time to speak up. It's better to say it before it happens than give a testimony afterwards. Yeah.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Another thing, also from your interview, you said, "I'm still shocked about what is deemed acceptable and unacceptable for broadcast." Would you like to talk a bit about that?
No, sure, absolutely. So that came quite early on from me being in Nigeria and being on radio. Essentially, it was a case of, I can't completely give you the exact example, but it was the case of me just bringing my professionalism or what I thought to be professionalism on air, and then hearing, you know, the difference in what I'm saying versus what it is that I can actually say on air, and thinking that surely that isn't allowed in these parts. But, you know, the dialect here, there are many dialects, but, you know, on radio, it can be like English and then, you know, the colloquial pidgin. And so that gives enough room to say some things that can be derogatory, offensive, you know, unprofessional, and other things, but predominantly those things. And so I found myself in a space where I was just like, surely that is not, you know, that is not allowed to be, we shouldn't be broadcasting things like that. And then you quickly find out that, no, to an extent, you know, many things can go. And you almost think to yourself, so all the things that I've learned and all that I'm trying to do, do I just forego that? Or do I put that in the box in order to relate and parlay with, you know, the majority of the audience here? That was something that was very surprising to me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what about branding? Of course, you are in the non-visual media industry, so to speak. How do you navigate the problem of visibility?
Yeah, so, you know, when you talk about visibility, no, radio doesn't fall into that space anymore. And that's across the world now. You know, there is no anonymity, or there isn't as much anonymity as there used to be with radio. These days, people want to relate with who they're listening to. They want to know, they like the voice, they like the conversation, they like the music, they're enjoying the personality on air. And in this day and age, they now want to put a face to the voice, a face to the name. So in terms of, you know, not being visible, that doesn't happen anymore. Radio today, you know, radios and podcasts, you can now watch them as well as listen to them. So it is both visually, it is just as pleasing to the ears as it is to the eyes now. So in terms of anonymity, that unfortunately is now eradicating. Yeah, if I have to be honest. But when it comes to branding, no, that is definitely important. And it is equally important here to not just put yourself under one niche. You know, in this industry, it is important to be open and flexible and diverse, more importantly. You don't just want to be put into a specific box. For me, you know, I didn't want to endanger myself and be put into the box of, oh, English speaking returnee or expatriate sort of box. And so, therefore, those are the only things that I do. You definitely, it's important to work on your brand, but you need to figure out where you want to go, because wherever, whatever you coin yourself or whatever your brand is, it will ultimately stick with you, especially for a long time. And so that's important. For me, my goal is to be a broadcaster. I want to be both a radio and television broadcaster. And I want to be able to do that in Africa without underselling myself anywhere else. So, yes, the roots are that I'm a radio broadcaster and a television broadcaster in Africa, but I would want it to travel to other parts of the world and not just keep me in an African box. And even whilst being in Africa, there are things that I would like to do, but that will come with time in terms of branding. I don't think that I could say, this is me and this is my brand right now. I dare say that I am that accomplished to give myself a complete brand right now.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Also, what would you say about competition within the industry?
Sorry, do you want to take that again?
What would you say about competition within the industry?
I would say that for me, I've experienced it to be very healthy, but I would also say that, in this industry and in this space in Lagos, we're heavier with women than we are with men. There are definitely men in the media space, very successful men, as are there women as well. But yeah, the ratio is that there are more women to men. And of course, we all want the best jobs. We all want to be hosting things. We all want our faces and our names and our voices at the forefront when it's time to pick, media personalities to do this, that, and the other. So it's healthy, but it's not, I haven't witnessed it to be a stampede, and I haven't witnessed it to be unfair, or it to be dirty, or tactics to be played. What I think plays a big part in it is longevity and also visibility. So it's like, how long have you been on the scene, and how often do we see you? And of course, social media is definitely going to play a part in that. It would be naive of me to say that we're not all aware of the role that social media plays in how we get jobs, in how, we are called to do things, or yeah, just work basically. So that is a key part in it, to keep up with social media, to be visible without being irritating. That's a key thing for me. I don't just want to be there, here, there, and everywhere. That for me does not work. And I also want my work to speak for itself, but at the same time, if it doesn't speak loud enough, then you're going to have to put things in place. So yes, it's a hustle, and Nigerians are hustlers, so you have to join, you have to jump on that train and join them, otherwise you really will get left
Left
behind.
behind. Oh wow. That's actually interesting that you say that because, of course, like you say, you do have to embrace, being seen as well as being heard. So
Yeah.
if you also then, do not want to be seen everywhere, all the time, like you say, to then come off as being irritating, how then do you like determine what to attend and where to go and where you're seen?
Okay, so I mean, yes, that's a good question. How does one determine where to go and where you're placed? And yeah, you're quite right actually about that. I mean, with something like that, you don't have to be everywhere. You may get invited to 10 things, But you don't have to go to all of that. Again, you as an individual will have your wits about you. You may want to do a little bit of research and be like, who's going, you know, who's the who's who of who's going, and, you know, what are we going to do there, and how is it going to help me or not help me? So, yeah, and you know, the social scene here is quite repetitive. So to an extent, if you've been to one, you've been to all. But you just have to decipher what's going to work for you, and must you attend all of them? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds like good advice.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay, so finally, I'd like to speak with you about this program that I saw that you moderated, actually. I think the discussion was about the prison system in Nigeria.
That's another sector in Nigeria that badly needs to be fixed. Like, I couldn't possibly say which one comes first between the healthcare sector and prison and reforming, you know, the prison system.
Mm-hmm.
Both are rotting and more needs to be done. So yes, I did moderate a conversation quite recently, you know, with key guests that, you know, had very different ideas and experiences about the prison system in Nigeria. Ultimately, they all agreed that it is not working, it is not effective, it is congested, and it's not even helping rehabilitate criminals there. It's just, it's not effective.
I mean, I did watch it on YouTube, and just for the benefit of our audience, I'd like to share what I heard, one of which is the female wing of the Kirikiri Maximum Prison, as of 2019, had a capacity of 211 inmates, I would assume, but currently holds about 299, so I would say over 300 at this point. And only 65 of all 300 have been sentenced, with 234 awaiting trial. I mean, what do you think of that?
I mean, when you put that into percentages, it's very telling. You know, the numbers add up, and they tell you that it makes no sense, and it's congested, and it shouldn't be that way. First of all, it seems to be the only prison that we have for females. And again, like I said, it is there's no more space. So why is that the situation that we have on ground? You know, why do we not have a system where if you're awaiting trial, then you're at this stage? What is your offense? Does it require you to be put into Kirikiri? There needs to be tiers and levels to these things. If not, this is where we find ourselves. And how long will it take to get the remaining? So if there are 65 that are awaiting trial, and yet there are at least 300, the difference in that, how long will it take? Who's looking at their offenses and deciding that, yes, okay, this is the steps that needs to be put in place. It's nothing, and they must not be forgotten about.
I also did find out that pregnant women and their children are also being held in the prison.
Exactly, that's correct.
So you have children being born into the prison system, and oftentimes growing up in that system. What does that mean? If the point of the prison system is to sort of, it shouldn't be punitive, but it should be for rehabilitation. But how can rehabilitation work?
Yeah. How can represent? First of all, I just want to put into that, after you put out that statistic. Prison is no place for a child. Even young people that you know, young people that are offenders, they call them young offenders and put them in detention centers. But prison is no place for a child. That in itself should tell you that what you're doing is wrong. And I question again, what is the offense of the expecting mother that she has to be there whilst expecting and then be there again to give birth? And then that is there, that is then what you create as a home for mother and child. That is incredibly wrong. It's an injustice and a disservice to human beings, irrespective of their crime.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, it is interesting that, you know, you'd have a prison system that, you know, either claims to punish or to rehabilitate, but then you have children being born into that system. I mean, if they then grow up around, you know, the kinds of people who probably are in prison, you know, if they do get released alongside their mothers, what then do they do in society?
Yeah, what becomes of their life? Again, and this is something that needs to be discussed more often. If we let them, if we just have a discussion about it and we forget about them, then that's exactly what they are. They are just forgotten to rot in prison. They haven't been given a fair trial. They haven't been assessed. They've just been parked in there to pay. What is their crime that they're serving this much time? It makes no sense. It just makes no sense.
Well, all right. Thank you very much for a stimulating conversation.
I tried my very best. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. Would you like to tell our audience, you know, where to find you or how to find your work?
Yes. I mean, you know, social media is the first place to find me. And then, of course, we can interact from there. So my handle is @ONILE. That's ONILE across Twitter and Instagram.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Tune in to our next episode of Conversation Crucible when it becomes available. Thank you for listening. Goodbye and come back soon.